So the reading, as Mark said, is on page 30 of the little green Luke's Gospels. And we'll start reading at verse 40 at the bottom of the page. Now when Jesus returned, the crowd welcomed him, for they were all waiting for him. And there came a man named Jairus, who was a ruler of the synagogue. And falling at Jesus' feet, he implored him to come to his house, for he had an only daughter, about 12 years of age, and she was dying. As Jesus went, the people pressed around him, and there was a woman who had had a discharge of blood for 12 years, and though she had spent all her living on physicians, she could not be healed by anyone. She came up behind him and touched the fringe of his garment, and immediately her discharge of blood ceased. And Jesus said, "Who was it that touched me?" When all denied it, Peter said, "Master, the crowds surround you and are pressing in on you." But Jesus said, "Someone touched me, for I perceive that power has gone out from me." And when the woman saw that she was not hidden, she came trembling and falling down before him, declared in the presence of all the people why she had touched him, and how she had been immediately healed. And he said to her, "Daughter, your faith has made you well. Go in peace."
Hannah, thank you very much indeed for reading for us. May I add my welcome to you, and part two of this series, really part three actually. The first part was fear and nature, and as it's called, nature. There's really no such thing as nature, but fear and creation, and we dealt with that several weeks ago. But part two of this this short 3 week, 4 week series, fear and faith, and looking at how Jesus brings an end to our fears. Last week, we looked at fear and evil. This week, fear and sickness. And next week, fear and death. And we are dealing, as we deal with fear and sickness, which I'm very well aware is immensely sensitive and something that goes right to the core of our being. I want us to begin by looking at the personal, social, and on occasion, spiritual pain that comes from sickness and suffering. And our first point is sickness, shame, isolation, and fear. And I think you'll agree with me that the woman described in the passage we just had read in verse 43 certainly brings us right to the heart of our subject. It is a one-sentence verse of 32 words, verse 43, but those 32 words contain over a decade of worry, pain, suffering, social and spiritual exclusion. The woman was suffering from a physical condition that meant she experienced a constant flow of blood, probably from her womb, and the flow had continued unchecked for 12 years. Just look at verse 43. There was a woman who had had a discharge of blood for 12 years, and though she had spent all her living on physicians, she could not be healed by anyone. Luke, a doctor by profession, describes her attempts at healing in the verse. She'd spent all her living on physicians. So for 12 years, the length of time the synagogue ruler's daughter had been alive, this woman's life had been blighted by sickness. And it's not at all hard to imagine, is it, the doctor's appointments, the hours spent in the hospital waiting room, the consultations, and then the repeated cycle of hope, expectation, disappointment, despair. Given the nature of the condition, we can also imagine the degradation and the indignity, the humiliation, and the intrusion of primitive medicine into an intensely private condition. Luke tells us she'd spent all her money. Luke, I think, shows a loyalty to his profession. He was a physician himself, by not including what Mark's gospel tells us. She had suffered much under many physicians and spent all she had and was no better, but rather grew worse. Luke is a little more discreet as he considers his fellow doctors, I suspect. But it's not at all hard to empathize with the woman, for her physical and social isolation is exacerbated by the spiritual consequences. The Jewish law of Moses contained certain ceremonial laws whose purpose was to heighten our awareness of this world spoiled by our human rebellion against God. And those ceremonial laws both increased an awareness of God's purity and were intended to make us deeply conscious of what is wrong with this world. So the purpose of the law of Moses was always to heighten our own awareness of our own human failure and the condition of humankind, and also to make us look forward to and long for a day when God would step into our world and deal with the consequences of our human failing and the fall. So conditions such as leprosy, certain bodily excretions, the female menstrual cycle, contact with the dead, these things made a person under the law spiritually unclean. And there was a particular law referring to this woman's condition in Leviticus 15. If a woman has a discharge of blood for many days, she shall continue in her uncleanness, as in the days of her impurity she shall be unclean. Now we need to be very clear on this, that there is no direct line between this one woman and her own individual personal failings and her physical condition. We cannot and must not draw a direct correlation between individual circumstances and personal sin. There is no such rule governing my own sickness, suffering, and so on, as if God was punishing her for something she or her ancestors had done in the past. Job teaches us that. But there is a line between all human suffering and our corporate human rebellion against God. And these ceremonial laws heighten awareness of our human condition, that we live in a fallen world and that all of us suffer the impact in one way or another of living in a fallen world. And these ceremonial laws, by heightening the purity of God and demonstrating our human condition, caused God's people to look forward to and long for a day when God would step into his world and rescue. I don't think we should be shy about that as Christians. You know, the secularist just buries his head in the sand and pretends that it's not a fallen world and all can be made better. One of the first things that happens when an atheist starts to come to his senses is a deep awareness that this is all is not well with this world, and a deep consciousness of my own part in the problems of the world. And these ceremonial laws would have meant that alongside the physical and financial suffering of this woman, there was also social and spiritual exclusion. Surely that's why she is so shy in verse 45. Jesus said, "Who was it that touched me?" And everybody denied it, including her. Her touching of Jesus should technically have rendered him and the others pressing in on him unclean. And she shouldn't even have been out mixing in such close proximity with all these people. And that surely is why she's so fearful, as well as being so shy in verse 47. When the woman saw that she wasn't hidden, she came trembling and falling down before him, declared in the presence of all the people why she'd touched him. Now, I don't think it's at all hard then for us to think of equivalent conditions and incurable sicknesses that leave both women and men similarly ashamed and isolated, excluded and fearful. Think of AIDS, for example, and those of you from South Africa will know, some of you, that more than one of your prominent politicians is understood to have died from illnesses associated with AIDS. but due to the public shame and humiliation associated with the condition, it's never been reported. But everybody knows that in South Africa. In this country, there's been real social stigma, hasn't there, around AIDS and the HIV virus. Other sexually transmitted diseases that are rife in our nation carry a same social stigma, don't they? You don't talk about it. And though of a completely different order to sexually transmitted diseases, some eating disorders, people with them, shroud their condition in secrecy, even as they carry around a sense of shame and inadequacy and personal loathing and terrible fear of discovery. We all know that. And those with them develop complex controlling mechanisms to keep everything hidden. For many men, depression carries a tremendous social stigma, doesn't it? It shouldn't. One in four of us suffer from it. And I suspect there are many of us here this afternoon who battle with the black dog, as it's called. But is it ever spoken of in your office? Very little, I suspect. Of course, we balk at the shame and exclusion that is actually fostered in some religions. So when Glenn Hoddle, former England manager, hapless English manager, announced that the disabled are suffering from the sins of their ancestors, we're right to say that is an appalling thing to say, even though it came from his religious convictions. But even in our enlightened culture, those of us who suffer in these kind of ways find ourselves often wanting to hide away, to bury our conditions in secrecy, and at all costs to avoid discovery. And I suspect, and I know, there will be many of us here who have secret conditions of one sort or another, which means we carry around with us fear of discovery, shame, the sort of thing this woman is facing. In fact, my wife, many years ago, dealt with a student at a summer camp, miles away from here, who had been raped in her early teens. She had not stopped bleeding for one day since the day of her rape. And my wife was the first person she'd ever told. So sickness, shame, isolation, and fear. And I think actually even it's kind of what you might call more open illnesses. People who have them or who are experiencing them in their families talk about isolation, and fear is rife. Let's move to our second point. And I want us to look now at Jesus, healing, inclusion, and safety. And I want to state up front that the point of these incidents in the gospel is not to suggest that if you come to Jesus today, you will step onto a conveyor belt of health, wealth, and prosperity. Now, some people make that mistake. Now, the point of these healing miracles is not to suggest that if you come to Jesus today, you will never experience depression again in this life. Some of the most deeply committed and wonderfully mature Christians I know suffer from depression. Indeed, some of the most well-known and publicly appreciated Christian ministers in the world suffer from deeply debilitating bouts of depression. The point, rather, is to show us that Jesus really is God's ruler, he is king, and that he will one day bring an end to all sickness, shame, and suffering for his people. And that now, in the present, Jesus welcomes and includes anybody who turns to him, whatever their condition. So identity, as Mark rightly pointed out, is the theme of this whole section. And these healing miracles are not here to tell us that if we come to Jesus today, we will definitely be healed. They are here to point to Jesus' kingship and the fact that he is the one to whom the law of Moses points, who will one day roll back all the sickness and suffering from his people. Now, I need to stress this negative point clearly because there have been so many people, some of whom are well-meaning, others who are just crooks, who have taken these incidents over the years and promised to God's people a life free from suffering and sickness. Some of you will have come across Benny Hinn, who is a rogue, and his teaching, Lord, I Need a Miracle. Here is one of his early books, Lord, I Need a Miracle. And he suggests that if you have enough faith, you will be healed. And if you haven't got enough faith, that if you haven't been healed, that's because you haven't got enough faith. Others will have come across the American Joel Osteen and his material, Your Best Life Now, with his shiny teeth and his large, spangly auditorium. Personally, I worry about some aspects of the Hillsong movement that they encourage a health and wealth teaching of this sort. But that is not the point of these miracles here. In fact, it only takes a couple of seconds to realize that the people who follow Jesus are not automatically healed of all their illnesses. Think of Aristarchus, one of Paul's most trusted co-workers, who Paul leaves behind in a particular city because he's sick. Think of Epaphroditus, who Paul says was on the point of death and nearly died for the sake of the gospel. And Paul told us to honor such men, and Paul himself, who suffered from his thorn in the flesh. No, the point of these incidents is to show us that Jesus really is the one who is promised for centuries before his arrival, who can and will roll back all the impact and effects of the fall, so that one day those who trust him in him will know no more suffering, no more shame, no more sadness, no more tears, no more sickness, no more death. And to show us that Jesus welcomes all who turn to him, whatever their condition. I've used this sort of illustration before, but I sometimes use the picture of, you know, you occasionally have a week in the middle of February. I don't think we've had it yet, and I don't think we're going to get it for a few weeks yet, actually. But those of you from overseas, don't be fooled by this. Every now and then, in mid-February, early March, you get a glorious week of sunshine. And, you know, those of us who are rather more naive move our garden furniture out onto the patio or whatever it happens to be, and we sit out at the weekend and get the barbie all ready. And then the following week, suddenly the birds start singing and all, they think, this is it. And then suddenly the next week the snow rolls in again from Siberia and we're plunged into deep winter. See, with the breaking in of Jesus into history, we are given a snapshot of what it's going to be like on the last day. Here is God's King, who, as ruler and king, will roll back from his people on the last day all the impacts of humanity's fall, the sin, the sadness, the sickness, the suffering, the shame. And I have to say, for those I deal with, I have the privilege of, you know, often spending a bit of time with people who are suffering from these sort of hidden things. And to be able to say to them, look, you may not experience full healing now, but there is a day when he will return and this will all be rolled back, is immense encouragement. But it also tells us something about the present. And I want us to notice briefly what she touched, what happened next, which way the power flowed, and in what terms Jesus addressed her. So look at what she touched in verse 44. She came up behind him and touched the fringe of his garment, and immediately her discharge of blood ceased. She touched the fringe of his garment, which is actually a technical word, the kraspidon, the tassel. And the tassel on a Jew's coat was one of the coloured cotton bobbles on each corner of the coat that were attached with blue cotton to the coat. And they were there to look at as an aid memoir to remind the wearer to keep the law. You can read about them in Numbers. It shall be a tassel for you to look at and remember all the commandments of the law, to do them, not to follow after your own heart, so you shall remember to do all the law. Now, that's what the woman touched. She reached out from behind Jesus when he wasn't looking and touched the most, if you might say, the most religious part of his garment. And this part of his garment ought to have condemned her and excluded her, bringing back into her memory all the law that she's read about that actually shut her out and multiplied her fear and sense of the failure of humanity. But look at what happened. Immediately her discharge of blood ceased. And look at which way the power flowed. Verse 46, someone touched me, for I perceive that power has gone out from me. So that instead of being contaminated, Jesus decontaminates. And instead of being condemned by her condition, she finds as she comes to Jesus that she is cleansed. And she touches the one part of Jesus' clothing that was designed to remind her of the demands of the law and the very person to whom the whole of the law points as God's promised rescuer. And she finds herself healed. And now look at the terms in which Jesus addresses her. Verse 48, quite beautifully, daughter, your faith has made you well. Go in peace. So faith drives out fear. Faith sees this woman who is excluded by the law, shut out, condemned by the law, and isolated by the law. Faith in Jesus finds in Jesus the fulfillment of the law, everything that the law points towards. And faith finds in Jesus the one who includes, welcomes, heals, and cleanses. It's a quite beautiful, beautiful incident that goes right to the heart of the Christian faith. And I want to suggest that this is radically countercultural. It spells out the difference between Jesus and all other religion. So there'll be some people here from a Hindu background, and I want to say we're really delighted you're with us from a Hindu background and really glad you've come to join us today to look at the person of Jesus Christ, if that is you. But the Hindu holy man in such a situation would have to say what Glenn Hoddle said. You are in the state you are in because of your karma. And you must look to improve your karma and better luck next time. And there'll be some, I'm sure, with some sort of Islamic background with us. I really hope you are with us, and we welcome people from a Muslim background amongst us, if that's you. But the Muslim imam would have to say, you or your loved one must have done something wrong. You know, Allah is executing his just judgment on you. This is your fate, decided by the all-sovereign Allah. The secularist can say, well, you've just got one life to live. You just happen to have drawn an unlucky number. And if it gets too bad, I suggest you end your life. That's the direction secularism is going in. And Jesus says, come to me. I'm the one you're longing for. I welcome you. I include you. You will have pride of place in my kingdom. You are cleansed. Daughter, your faith has made you well. It's a beautiful statement, isn't it? Come into the family. Welcome home. Well, as we close, I want to talk to you now if you are specifically someone who has been carrying around the sort of thing that this woman has been carrying around with her. With the breakdown of the family in this country, it will be the weak and the defenseless who suffer most. Women and children will suffer most as family deteriorates in this country. Men will suffer too. This woman could not have articulated the Apostles' Creed, could she? Or the 39 Articles or the Westminster Confession. She just reaches out, I think, in some element of superstition, in a sense, and touches the one thing that she thinks is going to have most power. She knew little, but she did know that we live in a fallen world, that she was part of fallen humanity, deeply conscious of her own part in that. She did sense that Jesus was the answer to her problems. And even in her superstitious faith, she reached out to Jesus, and as she came to Jesus and touched him, she found herself welcomed. Now, I suspect there will be a number who can associate deeply with this woman. We were talking about the passage this morning. Somebody said, for many of us, we will be saying, what I carry around is just too big for Jesus to deal with. What I carry around is just too shameful to bring to Jesus. What I carry around is just too dirty for Jesus. And somebody said, there is such a thing as secret sin that burrows deep into our heart, and we feel we could never confess to Jesus. Well, the glorious truth of this woman is that as she comes to Jesus, even with her tentative and somewhat superstitious faith, you might say, because she comes to him, she is welcomed and included. And the glorious thing you will discover, if you are somebody who carries around shame and isolation and seclusion and a deep sense of your own sin, is that as you turn to Jesus, you are welcomed and included into the family. Let me lead us in prayer. Jesus said, come to me, all who labor and are heavy laden, and I will give you rest. And so we praise you for the great rest of the last day, when all suffering, shame, isolation will be rolled back. We thank you for this demonstration, Lord Jesus, that you are the one with all power to do it. And we praise you that you welcome the sinner who comes to you, and that you welcome us into your family. And so please, Lord, may we be those who come to you openly, dependently, looking to you and to your cross to cleanse us and include us. And we ask it in the name of Jesus. Amen.